This is Ben Craven from bencraven.com, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Welcome to episode 13 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. As usual, there are lots of ways to get involved with the podcast via the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes, and by email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. Or you can leave a voicemail message and appear on the show by calling 0844 579 6949 and using the mailbox number 39417. As some of you have already done, there's also a way now to upload files directly to the show, which I can then use on future episodes. You'll find that on the website on the right-hand side. After the 90125 episode last week, musician, producer and songwriter Greg Kochis, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, Greg, who is at Kochis, that's at K-O-C-I-S on Twitter, left a comment to say that Trevor Rabin has released an album called 10924. It includes lots of original versions of some of the songs which turned up on 90125. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's fascinating to hear these early versions, so thanks for sharing this, Greg. If you don't know Greg's fascinating site, then get over to gregkochis.com for his blog, as well as all the things he does with music technology, including his fantastic drum loops and remixes and a lot more. You won't be disappointed. I'll put that link as well in the show notes. This week's featured album is Big Generator from 1987. Yes find themselves for at least the second time in their history making a difficult second album. The massive worldwide success of 90125 was always going to be a difficult act to follow, but here we are with Big Generator 4 years after 90125. The musicians on the record stay the same as on 90125, and Trevor Horn is still there in the mix producing. But interestingly, his name is fourth on the list of producers after Yes themselves, Trevor Rabin and Paul de Villiers. This combines with the number of different recording studios used. I make it six mentioned on the sleeve notes in Italy, London and Los Angeles to produce a nagging doubt that all was well with the development of this album. The cover is a development of the 90125 computerized style, and it appears that Big Generator is once again very much a Rabin production, as he is also credited with joint engineering as well as string arrangements, which is of course something I like to see. A final atypical factor for Yes is the inclusion of what is referred to as horns on Almost Like Love by Soul Lips and harmonica on Love Will Find a Way by James Zavala. As I've said before, I have an unfair and irrational mistrust of bands who wheel in session musicians to make up for the inability of the band itself to produce the effect they want. However, this is undoubtedly my problem, not theirs. I would say, though, that this is not a very promising start for me. As usual, I will focus on the actual music. If you want to read the tortured story of the album, the usual sources will have the full picture. So we start with Rhythm of Love. For 39 seconds, we could be forgiven for thinking that Yes have returned to their previous aesthetic. Familiar-sounding wordless vocals combine with washes of keyboards, what sounds like flutes and other assorted instruments, and a bit of a feeling of the opening of Close to the Edge, or at least an updated version. But then Alan White tears in with a heavy rock beat accompanied by Squire's pounding bass and Rabin's lead guitar, and we know that, in fact, we are still in stadium rock mode. Anderson comes in brightly, but I'm always thinking Anderson is singing this Trevor Rabin song beautifully, rather than isn't it great to have another Yes album. So the verse is very much in an 80s rock style. The bridge gives us hints of prog rock with a high soaring Anderson line brilliantly supported by the wide-ranging pitch of a backing vocal line, but the chorus catapults us back into the world of Rabin, albeit with a great set of vocal arrangements. Just to be clear once again, I like this music, I like Rabin's style, I like 80s stadium rock, and I think this version of Yes make it their own and infuse it with more creativity and musicianship than the vast majority of their peers. But I think Big Generator for me has gone too far down this particular musical cul-de-sac, at least on tracks like this. I wonder how many 80s stadium rock revival bands are out there. fewer than the number of prog rock outfits who are constantly striving to create new and more wonderful branches of the genre. Just look at what Ben Craven's doing. Anyway, back to the Rhythm of Love. It's got a great driving pulse, interrupted by nice passages like the bridge section and great playing, as you'd expect. The melody is catchy, and there's Rabin once again soloing in characteristic style with lots of notes and creativity. Certainly, without Anderson and the other old-timers, this track could be a bit jaundiced, but as it is, it's a rabble-rousing start to the album. The next track, Big Generator itself, starts with a Trevor Horn-esque vocal workout, reminiscent of the ones on 90125. This is only a brief passage, however, and we're soon into the biggest, fattest, heaviest Rabin riff yet, with those Owner of a Lonely Heart orchestral stabs thrown in for good measure. Maybe I'm being unfair, but I get the feeling that rock musicians often retreat into more and more extreme forms of what they do when the right chemistry isn't happening or they're short of ideas. For example, one of the greatest guitarists of all time, Brian May, did this on solo projects. The music was often much heavier and rarely imbued with the same touches of genius that his own compositions with the whole band achieved. And I'm wondering if that's the case a bit with this Yes album. All the ingredients of 90125 are there, but it seems like it's all run out of steam a bit, particularly on tracks like this one. Once again, Anderson does his best to bring a bit of Yes, awe and wonder into the verses, but the chorus is another blast and bluster affair with little poise. There's also a slightly uncomfortable passage which starts, Second Nature Sacrifice, with some very questionable keyboard interjections owing rather too much to 80s pop, in my opinion. There is good contrast between verse and the other sections, but the material altogether sounds weak, despite some good production. The guitar solo around 2:46 is a strange affair, with a tone that doesn't fit the rest of the song very well. The move it to the left, move it to the right refrain is effective, and there is a nice robotic-sounding vocal effect at one point, but all in all, the material doesn't really hang together very well, and it sounds a bit like the band were trying too hard to stitch the sections together, meaning it all sounds a bit forced. I can ignore all this and enjoy it for what it is, but it doesn't bear very close scrutiny. Shoot High, Aim Low starts much more promisingly. It's moody and intriguing and features a great Alan White beat which sparkles and pops, providing an effective contrast to blasts of orchestral sound. It's a long track and it feels like it's been given much more time to breathe, to establish itself before rushing into a chorus, and maybe that's the key to some of the classic Yes pieces. I think the mood and technique here foreshadow the arguably more effective Talk album. The sung conversation between Anderson and Rabin in the verse works really well, and when the chorus does get going, it's understated and uses great word painting. If you imagine the shape of the melodic line, the words shoot high, aim low fit perfectly. It's also lower than usual in the singer's range, or at least that's the effect it produces, with Squire's growling bass at the bottom, filling out the texture and heightening the mood further. The elaborate Rabin solo at about 2 minutes 14 gives a nice contrast again, with its fast-running passages and strident tone above the sombre, relaxed bed of sound. Tony Kaye introduces some expansive church organ voices, along with other subtleties. The image it conjures up for me is of some vast prairie or other open expanse of wilderness. It's a track to close your eyes to and enjoy, much more of a listening pleasure than the previous two. The final track on side one is difficult to describe, as it's so far away from anything I've ever heard by Yes. It starts with Alan White showing off his mastery of a totally different style of drumming from his normal Yes technique. It's an up-tempo romp with snare drum on every beat, keyboards joining in party style, and guitar and bass hammering away at a bit of a rocky riff. It sounds more like the opening of a Wham song than the Yes of Fragile and Going for the One. This opening rhythm is replaced by a lighter feel to introduce the vocals, and at least Anderson reminds us this is meant to be a Yes album, just by opening his mouth. The feel on this track does actually sow the seed for the more up-tempo outings of the future, like To Be Alive on The Ladder, but I'm finding it a struggle to hear any Yes elements here other than Anderson's voice, particularly in a few spots of relative repose in the song. It's a really good pop song, but I feel as if I expect more from Yes. I expect every song to go beyond what others can do. I expect more than a brilliant Rabin solo and fantastic playing from all the musicians to create a work of Yes music. Am I being unrealistic? Let me know what you think. So on to side two. And what's this? A string quartet, expertly arranged by Rabin. This really sounds like characteristic string quartet writing. Compared to a lot of string writing for rock and pop, this is something quite different. There's very little of the usual chordal chugging. The instruments here are playing fully independent parts for the majority of the short introductory passage. Unfortunately, Rabin, I think, falls into the second trap of arrangement for songs. The string quartet appears only for the first 14 seconds of the song. It's little more than a bolt-on. I would love to have heard it integrated properly into the song, like the arrangements on Magnification, or even Time and a Word. It's a great shame, as Rabin certainly has the talent and ability to arrange beautifully for string quartet, and of course he went on to be a very successful film composer. The rest of the song is a very powerful crowd-pleaser, and very effectively put together. The riff hook between Rabin and Squire is a fantastic rolling figure, and the rest of the band pile in satisfyingly to produce a broad, expansive rock sound. When the vocals appear, it's Rabin and the choir rather than Anderson, and there's little to suggest that this is Yes. It's not until about 2 minutes that I can really hear Anderson, which seems a bit of a waste. It feels like a Rabin solo project, as I said earlier, even more than the other songs so far. Clearly a single-focused effort, it unfortunately lacks some of the magic of Owner of a Lonely Heart, tending more to the basic four-in-a-bar formulaic 80s rock tune formula, complete with unconvincing bash at the end. Not my favourite Yes song. In Final Eyes, however, we get a real Anderson-inspired Yes feel at the beginning. It's gorgeous stuff with a real prog rock feel, and it's clearly heavily influenced by Anderson. The Yes choir sound is back, and the melody has the arc of the best of previous tunes, producing the uplifting feel we have seen before. Anderson is on fine form here, and the keyboard and bass part around 1 minute 10 creates a thrilling moment, starting high and resolving downwards. It phases across the vocal line, which begins again before the bass part finishes its pattern. A lovely effect, simple but dramatic. Rabin does come in next with a rockier mood and pulse, but this time it creates a great contrast to what came before. There's also some nice rhythmical interplay between instruments and voice. Anderson arrives again with a different section, If I Ever Needed Someone, and then the opening idea returns for a recap, creating good contrast again. The combination of tempos and sections seems to work so much better on this track. Maybe it's an example of what can be achieved when Anderson works closely with Rabin. Tony Kaye adds some Yes-sounding keyboards at around 5 minutes 10 in a slow interlude before a well-constructed ending featuring some acoustic work by Rabin. It seems as if the album is improving on side 2. I'm Running is the longest track on the album at 7 minutes 38 and one of my favourites. It starts with a kind of South American or Spanish vibe, which could sound contrived but in fact doesn't due to some great playing by all instrumentalists. It develops into a fiesta, with acoustic guitar highly effective against the percussive accompaniment, all based around a fine piece of drumming by Alan White. Then the tempo relaxes and a quiet passage featuring that marimba again leads into a highly atmospheric section, with piano making some nice interjections. The reverb and cadences of Anderson's vocal line when it enters are very reminiscent of a classic Yes approach, and the track is building up into a bit of a proper prog piece. The chorus is more restrained than a lot of the other tracks, and the trademark contrast in textures between quite a fast drum pattern and the long vocal and other instrumental lines reminds us who we are listening to. Rabin ties the different sections together with some subtle guitar work, and then we are back to the opening fiesta feel. The segue is very well handled, and Anderson's very high-pitched line soars over the top. Just when you thought it was going to end in a climax, the restrained feel returns, and Rabin plays his most beautifully relaxed solo on the album. No heroics, just a perfectly judged feel. The piece has a fantastic ebb and flow to it, and never becomes overbearing like some of the other tracks. Even the super-fast Rabin solos don't sound out of place, and it quickly gives way to the Latin American feel again. Kay blends piano and Hammond organ into the mix, and there are touches of a Ladder-era feel. It certainly is prog rock and feels very much like Yes, which is a great relief. The album is rounded off by what amounts to a John Anderson solo track, Holy Lamb, Song for Harmonic Convergence. It's a slightly strange way to finish. 3 minutes 24 seconds of Anderson's almost whimsical but ultimately powerful and affecting work, which would not look out of place on one of his own solo albums. Let me be clear. While it strays close to whimsy, it's the kind of whimsy that Noel Coward's masterpieces are built on. But it still feels like I'm Running would have been a better way to complete the record. The song builds very effectively through verses and choruses, with the repeated rhythmical pattern supporting a strong melody, and Anderson providing his own backing vocals. I love the sound of the song, the arrangement, and the sentiment. Some of it sounds rather like a Christmas single, and that's not a bad thing in itself, but just as it gets going properly it fades out, which is odd. I think it could have supported at least one more verse and chorus. In fact, I wish it had been developed into a full track, as it feels very foreshortened as it is. I wonder if a better version still exists on a studio tape somewhere. Let me know if you've heard of such a thing. And finally, I'm wondering whether it was foreshortened like this because of the physical constraints of LP records. So overall then, Big Generator is a bit of a puzzle, and I think it stands at a crossroads in Yes musical history. It could be said that the band failed to follow up 90125 effectively with Big Generator. As I said earlier, I think the big rocky 80s tracks are fairly disappointing, but the album also includes a few gems like I'm Running and Final Eyes. Maybe we can see the beginnings of the split between band members who wanted to go separate ways, those pushing for more rock-orientated heavy songs, and those attempting to pull things back in a more progressive direction, if that's not a contradiction in terms. Certainly, as we will see next time, the next phase of the music of the band was not necessarily the most successful, despite the union of forces. So plenty to love about Big Generator, but also plenty to be a bit disappointed with. So that's about it for this week. Thanks once again so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next time we'll move on to the next studio album, Union, from 1991. This will be early in 2012, but don't worry, there will be episodes in the meantime, beginning with the Yes Music Champagne Moments episode next week. So your homework for the next album episode is to listen to Union and see what you think. Then listen next time and see if you agree with me. Also, please get involved at the website, yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at yesmusicpodcast, send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, leave a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or upload an audio file if you like, using the link on the right-hand side of the website. I'd love to hear from you. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes. Thank you.